Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The Trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Blue Otter, are you there?
I sure am, Mary. Pleasure to be here.
Okay, and who do you have for us today?
Well, it's a great honor today to have joining us Joshua and Daisy Shapiro. They're the Crystal Skull Explorers.
Hi.
Oh, that's yep. Oh, hi, Joshua.
Hi.
Well, let me tell folks a little bit about the Crystal Skulls. They are human-sized and shaped skulls made from various types of quartz crystals, and they're considered to be one of the world's greatest mysteries. And since the 19th century, a number of these special treasures have been discovered around the ruins of ancient civilizations in Mexico and Central America. And now as we enter the 21st century, their origins continue to be unknown, as well as who made them or why. Yet for many individuals who have personally visited and had contact with such a crystal skull, their lives have changed profoundly. To the indigenous people in our world, as discussed by their shamans and elders, the crystal skulls are considered to be very sacred to them. It's stated through some of their oral traditions, as well as within their prophecies, that the crystal skulls have a very special and vital role to play in humanity's future. Purportedly, there are a number of other crystal skulls being secretly protected by these cultures. For instance, there's one band just west of Albuquerque, New Mexico, that holds the skull. And today we have joining us, as I said, Joshua and Daisy Shapiro, as they'll act as your guides to investigate the incredible world of the crystal skulls. And we're introducing their brand new book. You'll be introduced to some of the most amazing crystal skulls known in existence, as well as the special group of individuals who are intricately involved with them. And we'll be telling you surprising personal accounts, but they almost sound like science fiction, of these people who have had close contact with such a skull, and learning about the results of new research conducted by the authors never published before. And their book will provide new clues in helping to unravel the mystery surrounding the crystal skulls and how these powerful ancient tools will assist humanity to move into a time of total peace, a golden age, by 2013. And Joshua and Daisy, we are just absolutely thrilled to have you on the show today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, we're talking from Holland today, and as your listeners can hear, I'm American, although two of my friends have already told me that I'm starting to pick up a Dutch accent. And fortunately, here in Holland, many people speak English. English is the second language in Europe. So I met Daisy when she attended the very first lecture I gave in Holland. I had no idea what to expect.
And tell Daisy from me, I've seen her picture. She is one beautiful woman.
She is.
Oh, the Mary is your first name, right?
Yes.
Okay, Mary says that you're a very beautiful lady. She saw your picture on the internet. So anyway, that's how we met. I was working with the crystal skulls prior to this from 1983, because in that year I saw an amethyst crystal skull. And what was really amazing about when I saw it is I just saw a picture of it, and I actually felt inside of myself like an inner earthquake. And then like about moments later, maybe like 5 minutes later, there was an actual earthquake in California where I was.
Really?
So, yeah, so it's like the inner and the outer happening so close together, and looking at this picture of this amethyst crystal skull, it was just like something woke up inside of me and I knew that I had to be involved in this. But I didn't realize at that moment, which is now 20 years later, that I would have this beautiful Dutch wife who loves the crystal skulls more than I do, and we would be traveling together, and I would be traveling all over the world to meet different crystal skulls and people, and I have no clue how many lectures I've given. I've lost track of it. But the one thing I feel related to the crystal skulls is not only have they provided some amazing personal experiences for myself and for Daisy as well, but the people that we've met along the way have been just absolutely super. So what we have is we have a World Mystery Research Center that we started in 2001, which is in the U.S. in Holland, and that's where we do our research through on the crystal skulls.
And what is your website, Joshua?
Okay, well, we have basically three key websites. Maybe we'll just give one now and talk about some of the other ones later. The one for the book, which has all this information that we're going to be talking about today, is www.CrystalSkullExplorers, that's explorers with an S.com. So real easy to remember. People just look at Crystal Skull Explorers, then they'll find us.
And we'll have a link on Prophecy Keeper Show as well.
Yeah, great. So we have our World Mystery Research Center, and then BJ Enterprises was the American company I set up a long time ago, where we threw a lot of information on the crystal skulls, and then we have the research center. So we're keeping very busy, and also, unfortunately, you're talking to us now, but if you have us come back at a later time, we're going to see a new crystal skull in Switzerland, which is where we're going next month, which is March. And if anybody would like to know about this crystal skull for our book on the Crystal Skull Explorer site, we have a mailing list, and this is where we let people know about what's happening to us when we travel. We, like, send reports. Like, we have a report when we went to Peru in 2002 looking for a blue skull, so you'll probably want to ask me about that later. And then, of course, we also had our report from England in 2003, and you just told me there'll be people in London hearing this broadcast, so we got to see the crystal skull that's in the British Museum in London. But what happened is we also got to meditate and touch it, which is almost unheard of. So that's another report that they'll be able to read about. And then, of course, this crystal skull we're going to see next month called Maria, which we don't know very much about it, but the lady who has it has done a lot of healing with it. So this is the kind of things that happens to us as we travel. There's always something new coming up, or some very powerful experiences that people have, either from the slides we show of all the crystal skulls that are in the world that we know about, or with our own crystal skulls that we have too. We have a circle of 10 now that we work with. And for Daisy, well, Daisy, I think, is a very special and unique person. I think people can sense that if they see her picture on the website. She's Dutch, but her background is she has, one grandfather who was Chinese, two grandfathers are Dutch, one grandmother was Chinese, and one was Indonesian. So she kind of looks like a Peruvian, Hawaiian, what else?
Well, she looks Native American to me.
She looks exotic is what she looks like.
Yeah, and Native American. She's like, I guess, you know, they say for part of the prophecies, which, of course, Blue Otter knows, is that we're going to become more of a melting pot, I think, eventually, how human beings look, of all the combination of the different ancestries and races. So Daisy's already there.
Mm-hmm.
And she likes to be called Daisy Rainbow. But anyway,
she is more or less a rainbow person.
Yeah, absolutely. And she is a fantastic healer. She's taken some special training, because we do these consultations for people with our skulls, and Daisy does the healing part, and I do the talking part where I link in with the guides and I give information for people. And so, she also is able to communicate with the crystal skulls. The ones we have in our circle are her children. She takes care of them. They tell her what they need and what they want.
Well, she's going to have to ask how BUFO is going to be doing. Our radio station, one of these days, get back to me.
Okay.
Well, I want to first tell folks that I'm really grateful to Joshua, because back in September 1996, when we put the first prophecy website, and the Earth Mother Crying was the first multicultural prophecy website that was actually run by Native Americans. There were other folks that were doing this, but you were one of the first 10 or 12 founding members that I called of our website, because you were the first to link to us, and you believed in us, and I want to express my thanks and then give you that recognition. But thank you, Jeff.
Well, I started my spiritual path as a networker, and actually I believe for right now, as we enter into the year of 2004, I have never seen all these people that are starting to come together now and really wanting to work together. I've been waiting for this.
Well, the veil is lifting. The veil is lifting, and now people are becoming more aware. I think that with the veil lifting, more things are being shown to us, too.
Absolutely. So my pleasure to help out. And actually, because there were so many people that we linked to, I don't even remember the story you talked about, Blue Otter, because, you know, it's just, you know, these things come up and you feel, yeah, we should do the link, and you just do it. But, again, for me, because I do a lot of traveling, it's just there's so many amazing people out there having incredible experiences and stories. And, you know, it's just if people, I know a lot of times when I talk to people that are watching the news and they say, well, there's nothing good there and I don't have any hope for the future. And so I just try to tell them about all these fantastic people and the projects and the visions that they have so that they know that they're not alone and that, you know, people are, like you said, Mary, they're waking up and they're saying, I want to do something to make a difference. I want to participate in something.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you, who put you on this path?
With the crystal skulls or the spiritual path?
However you got started, whichever was first.
Both. Okay, and then I'm going to turn, after I answer, then we'll have Daisy answer too.
Sure.
Okay.
She has her own story, how you started your spiritual path. She gave me a look and like, oh, what am I going to be talking about here? So I just explained it to her. For me, let me think back. It was in the, early 1980s. I just started to feel like everything that I had been taught in school was wrong. There was something inside of me that said, there's something more to life. And so as an Aries person, and probably if there are other people listening who are Aries, then they'll say, yeah, we understand what Joshua's saying. When you get this bug inside of yourself and you get inspired to do something, for an Aries person, you can't stop till you get an answer. So I felt that there was something there I needed to know about. So this was when I was living in Chicago. I had just graduated from college and I was working as a computer person, but I always sensed that there was something more to life than just the 9-to-5 job. So I started to actually meet people in bars who told me about their own spiritual experiences. And then I started to go through a paper called the Chicago Reader, where they have ads from different organizations talking about events, and I actually visited some groups. And then what happened to me was, as I started to learn about these things, I said, wait a second, I already know this is true. It's like it was already a part of me, and I was just reading things I already knew. So I just felt like I had to participate, so I became part of different groups in Chicago. And then I really think my true journey began when I felt I had to go to California, because in California, and this is again in the early 80s, there's all these spiritual groups there and they're doing networking and everything you can imagine is in California. And as it turned out, the ex-girlfriend of my brother said, oh, if you come here, you can stay with me. So I found a friend, we drove a car, and I went completely on faith. I only had money to last for maybe 2 weeks. And then we ran out. My friend went back to Chicago, you know, because he couldn't stay. But I just felt like I was just getting started. And I just kind of went from place to place. I never knew where I was going to be sleeping or where I would be going. And I just let events guide and, my inner voice, my inner feeling guide. And that's pretty much how I started. And then, of course, one of the keys as a spiritual person is if you find stuff that's good and you think that's important, you should share it back with people. And so then all of a sudden, not only am I a networker, now I start to become a writer of books. And I have to tell you, even after I've done a few books, like the first book I did, which was the one at this time, was called Journeys of an Aquarian Age Networker. And it was just basically a collection of the information I collected and some personal experiences. I hate writing. And when I say this, it's not that I hate the process of sitting down and writing, because, like with the new book on the crystal skulls, the information just flows and it's there, but you have to do what's called editing.
Yep.
You have to make sure that it reads properly, because
yep.
You have some people out there, if you have one spelling error, they'll throw your book away, and they don't understand that it's the information. And in this new book that we have coming out, which is basically self-published right now, we edited it ourselves, and I have never, ever gone through 10 times. You know, I thought, okay, I'm done, I have everything, but then something said, no, go through it again, and other people went through it. So I'm not a polished writer.
We got 560 pages there.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of that is interviews with other people, so it's a lot easier for me to make sure that what they say sounds good than what I say, because I get to be a little wordy sometimes. So, but anyway, it's just like then I start to write and start it. Now, with the Crystal Skulls, after this networking book comes out, then about a year or so later, I have the opportunity to see this amethyst crystal skull in San Jose, California. And basically the story on it was is that the a Mayan elder brought it from Mexico. His village was very poor. They needed money. So they made an agreement with an art museum that he gets a loan and they get the skull as collateral. If he repays the loan, then he gets the skull back. Well, the shaman never repays the loan. And shortly after I actually saw that crystal skull, a group of businessmen came in. Eventually they bought it. And they are the ones who have it now. They're like asking for $1 million for it because they believe it, you know, cannot be duplicated and it's very, very old.
I have to ask you a question there. Yeah. When the shaman sold or gave up the crystal skull, did it affect the village at all with the crystal skull gone?
We don't know because I think they lost track of the shaman. Like when I was writing the book, and I was talking about this crystal skull, which, by the way, they now have a name, which Daisy and I are very proud about this because we were invited in November of 2001 to San Jose, and the owners of the skull, one person there, Al, he's a very good friend of ours, he arranged for us to do research with it, which was pretty spectacular, and we just did it all in a hotel. We had about 7 or 8 people that participated. We got to sleep with the crystal skull. But
you got to sleep with it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. It was with our skulls. We had 3 of our skulls there, and it was right next to our heads while we were sleeping, and we slept with it. But
any special dreams?
Well, you see, now here's the problem for me. I've slept with and been with so many crystal skulls that their energy has already integrated into my field. So where maybe a person who's never seen a crystal skull, they'll go, oh, God, this crystal skull has so much energy, and they'll have profound changes, and their life will never be the same again, which does happen with many people that see these. But for me, it might just be like a little tingling I feel, or maybe I get a message or something now. So I really didn't have dreams.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines 2 Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Now, when we had the crystal skull ET, when I lived in Chicago, and that was next to me, my ex-wife, she had very profound dreams. She saw ET flying with the Mitchell Hedges skull, and it turned out that Mitchell Hedges skull was 90 miles away from us in Indiana at this time. So we brought those 2 crystal skulls together. This was back in 91. And then for me, it was like when I woke up in the morning, I felt like I had been exercising all night. You know how your body feels when your muscles are tense and
cathartic.
Yeah, and that's how I felt.
Isn't that a result from traveling, out of body experience? Out of body travel.
It can be from that, or it can just be from being in the energy field. You know, the thing with the crystal skulls is everybody has their own unique experience for it. So anyway, going back to the amethyst skull, so I saw a picture of it. I was told the skull was in San Jose, and then there was an arrangement made that I could sit with it. And when I sat with it at that time, I felt a very strong energy. It, like when I touched it with my right arm, the energy moved all the way from my fingers up into my shoulder. And I also felt that that skull was sitting over my right shoulder, and I actually had a psychic who told me during one lecture she saw a crystal skull over my shoulder. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I got started in all this. Now what I'd like to do is turn it over to Daisy, because she has a completely different story about how she got involved with her spiritual life and how she saw crystal skulls. So here's Daisy.
Hello, you all beautiful people. Here's Daisy.
Well, hi, Daisy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, you're such a beautiful woman.
Oh, well, thank you.
How did you get involved with the spirituality end as well as the getting involved with the crystal skulls?
Well, my spirituality started like maybe 13 years ago. I have not such an extended and wonderful story as Joshua to tell, but it started like 13 years ago when I became very sick, and in that period I was always very sick. My lungs were not very comfortable with the air here, and I got like a double pneumonia, and then the flu got me, and the flu didn't come out but stayed in, so I became very, very sick, and the doctor said we cannot do so many things for her anymore. And then I had like a nearly death experience.
Oh.
I went up and I saw, they showed me, the light being showed me so many things that it took me like 3 years to really come back to the earth again later. And they told me that I had to make a choice, or either to stay up there, which ended my life here on the earth, of course, or, and then they showed me how many people I would meet and how many people I could make a difference in their life. So for me, it was a very easy choice at that moment. Although I really wanted to stay up because it's so wonderful and beautiful up there.
Yes, yes.
And the trails are so loving, and, well, we all read about it, and it is really true. It's very nice. But I saw all these, yes?
I understand it's a big sacrifice to come back, because I know my mother-in-law had a near-death experience, and who was it that wrote Saved by the Light? The Lakota, half-Lakota lady, I just can't remember her name right now. But both of them reported that when they were told by the light beings they had to come back, that they both laid down like children and kicked and screamed and said, I'm not going back. So
yeah.
Your decision
yeah.
to come back, it was a great sacrifice, and we really appreciate it.
Well, I have to be honest, I did that too. I begged them. I really begged them and grabbed them. Like, say...
Well, the truth comes out.
Let me stay up here, please. I don't want to go back. But when I saw all these people, there came such a love and a compassion in my heart, and I thought, I cannot disappoint these people. And I had two children. And by the way, I never thought about these children, although I love them very, very much. But I never thought, when I was up, I never thought about my children, leaving my children there. And that was a very strange feeling afterwards when I came back. It was a very strange feeling for me. And it took me like maybe 3-4 years to even think to talk about this with other people.
Really?
Because, it was a very, very deep, great impact. And from that moment on, the doors went open and, it came in, the spirituality came just in. Although my guide said years later that I was on not very conscious, but like say an unconscious spiritual path when I was 2 years old.
Really?
So I remember that I was like 8 or 10 and I was reading books about spirituality under the blanket with a torch because I was brought up Catholic, and this was really not the way you should read the books. I mean, not the books about spirituality. That was by the devil, they said. So, but the blood goes where it cannot go, and I just went reading them, so...
You're reading what, the Catholic mystics?
No, I was reading about going out of your body and all these things. Yeah, more of those things.
Well, very good for you. You chose your own path even at that time.
Yes, that is true. I was always a person who chose what I wanted to do and not let people talk me into other things.
And then you met Joshua and got on the journey of the Crystal Skull, or how did that work?
Yeah, well, in 1998, there was a gathering of elders here in Holland, which was called the Wolf Song. It was Wolf Song 98. And for one reason, there was a lady coming up to me, and she said, "Oh, you look like a Native American, so you go to the Wolf Song." And I said, "No, I don't know nothing about this gathering." Well, and then she informed me, and I could participate for one day. And before I was at the actual spot where it was held, like 2 or 3 kilometers before, I could feel a very intense energy there. And as soon as I was on that place, I was searching for this energy, but I couldn't find it. And later, after the lunch, they took the crystal skulls out, and then I thought, oh yeah, of course. Although I never have seen a crystal skull in this lifetime before. But I recognized the energies of the old crystal skulls. And that was for me, well, like a homecoming, like something resonated, and that was it. It changed my life. And that was my first beginning with the crystal skulls. Then a couple of years later, in 2001, I went, what Joshua already said to you, I went to this lecture in Holland, and there I could really touch a crystal skull. Well, that was, I can hardly explain. It was so wonderful for me. And still, I didn't understand why I had this connection, or from which lifetime, or whatever. But then I got more and more involved with crystal skulls, and they helped me tremendously, because in 2001 I was going through a transformation spiral again and again and again. So all the issues which could use more light and bring to the light, I did this with the crystal skulls, and I'm very, very grateful for them to be here. They are really my crystal family. I love them very much.
Tell her how many crystal skulls you have at the house.
Oh, we have about, I don't know, 30, 40?
Oh, if you include the little ones.
Oh, if I include the little ones, it's over 100 crystal skulls at this moment in our house. So I mean, well, you can say like crystal skull heaven or something. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, did Joshua had said something about you heal, you're a healer. Did you get that from the skulls, or did you always have that ability, or did that ability come after your near-death experience?
Well, it's kind of like it came after my near-death experience. But I thought, well, maybe when the moment that you asked this, I had it all my life.
Mm-hmm.
That is, but it was not, it didn't came so much to surface. When the son was born and he was very small and he fell, he said to me, Mommy, put your hand on my knee because I have pain and I know when you do that it's over, it's gone.
Really?
So that was actually my very first, conscious connection with the healing.
Hmm.
And then on one day, I was like cleaning out a spiritual center where I was just volunteering and doing some work. And they had to shut down because of the high cost. And I said to Spirit, okay, I want to help you. But at that moment in Holland, the Reiki courses were very expensive. And I said, I cannot afford this, so give me something else. Please, Spirit, give me something else. And then a flyer fell on my foot immediately about a universal energy course. And that's what I did. And that's when I began. began to do more healing courses, and later on I received the three Reiki initiations, and I did Vortex, and and everything flows. I feel like I don't feel like a real healer. I feel more like an open channel for the universal and the divine energy.
Like a hollow bone.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Now you have knowledge of the parallel universes, right?
Yeah. The traveling I have done this as a little child. I know because I've been in the Sphinx and in the paws of the Sphinx, and I've been in certain places in Tibet, and I've been in other parts that I know there were like crystals and crystal skulls. I have seen that. And then I got married and I became a mother, it's like there came a veil of dust over this, and I didn't travel consciously for many, many years. But last year, something major happened to me, and it like reopened the door. And so I do travel through the dimensions, and it goes very, very fast, and I see very many species, very many space brothers and sisters in all kind of forms. That is amazing. Also, I sometimes can go to crystal planets, and sometimes the spirits allow me to take someone with me. I have one time asked if I could bring my daughter with me on this traveling, and they said yes, this is okay, and she saw everything that I saw. It was very, very beautiful.
Yeah, we understand that there are some planets that are actually a sea of glass.
Yes.
That, I believe a lot of prophecies is that this world eventually will become a sea of glass.
Yes.
And that we'll need only to look down at Mother Earth to be able to communicate with others and to communicate with a creator. So crystals, being a Cherokee, I know crystals are very important to my people and more so to my people than any most Native groups here in the Americas and North America shy away from crystals.
Oh, wow.
Well, the Cherokee is man, isn't it?
That seems to be the indication, is that Elder John Red Hat said that when we came up the second time from down in Mexico, that after our war with the Mound Builders, we fought a war with the ones now the Iroquois, and we agreed to stop speaking our language to settle that war. And our the calendar stone at Monataca, we'll be talking with one of the elders from Monataca, the place of peace, the calendar stone that was confiscated by the United States, and we have a drawing of it. It's very obviously Mayan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, that's amazing. We sure appreciate those comments, Daisy.
Oh, now, Daisy, so you go all over with Joshua to find these skulls?
Well, the skulls found us.
Uh-huh.
We don't have to travel for the skulls. The skulls just found us. And of course, Joshua received his first crystal skulls from his ex-wife as a gift, and then he brought also the little rose quartz skull called Unity. And that's when I met him. He had two skulls, two crystal people came, stone people came to him to travel with him. And that were my first, that were the first skulls I was working with, actually.
And what is your favorite skull, or do you have a favorite?
Well, yes, well, favorite, I love all the skulls.
Yeah,
really.
It's like asking which one of your children is your favorite. I'm sorry, I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, thank you. Well, one day Joshua asked me if I like to have a crystal skull, and of course I was very delighted. He wanted to give me a skull, and there came a clear quartz skull called Moses of Peace, and he is a 3-pound skull, and he is really gorgeous. I really, really loved it.
Now, that's the clear skull, right?
That is the clear skull, yes. Oh, you have a picture of that?
Yeah, I'm on your website looking.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I always like to look at the website when I'm talking.
Let me ask you, don't lose your place, and I don't mean to interrupt, but do you think that the skulls, let me preface this by saying I know for a fact that objects can carry the imprint of the original and subsequent carriers.
Yeah.
And I knew a fellow that had Sitting Bull's pipe, and he recently passed away and it was given back to his family. But these objects are definitely imprinted. Just like some hauntings are actually imprints, or like tape recordings that you might see a haunting and a ghost going through motions over and over again. But with the computer technology, we're beginning to understand that information is imprinted in silica, and crystal is a mineral, and so you might, if you want to comment on that, either now or down the road, please feel free.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yes, I do believe there are spirits around crystal skulls, because this crystal just talks to us, and I believe that sometimes I hear a voice coming from the crystal, and sometimes it's a total other voice coming from the crystal. So yes, I believe what you're telling me is true. That is correct. That at some artifacts there is this spirit coming. Oh, I hear that Joshua has something to say.
Okay.
So I hand over the telephone.
Well, it was nice talking to you. I hope you come back. Or, you know, when Joshua gets done speaking, don't leave.
Okay.
Just jump in whenever you feel like you want to say something, okay?
Yeah, thank
okay.
you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluehour speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony. So it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Okay, I'm back. I just wanted to add a comment. I heard Daisy was talking about the energies or spirits around the crystal skulls.
Yeah.
Right. I was wondering whether you thought that the original crafters or subsequent possessors may have imprinted parts of themselves, or maybe communicating with you through them.
Okay. Well, I was fortunate with the big one we have, which is known as Portal de Luz, which is Portuguese or Spanish for Portal of Light, that I got to meet the carver of this crystal skull. And I felt, because with many of these ancient ones, we have no idea where do they come from or who made them. I felt that it was important when I had my first large one, and this one is like 10 pounds, so it's a pretty big one, that I wanted to meet the individual who created it, because there were unusual phenomena that were going on around my skull, and this is a new skull. And maybe I should just pause for a second so the listeners understand the three different types of crystal skulls that exist, so that they'll be able to follow what I'm going to explain next. There are three different types. One is the ones that are being made now, which are either called contemporary or new. These are the ones that we have in our circle. There is another group of skulls, and this definition basically came from the Society of Crystal Skulls International. They needed to try to find differences between crystal skulls, so they came up with these three terms. The next type are called old crystal skulls, which are 100 years old. That's in their manufacture, to maybe 1,000 or 1,500 years old. And then we have the ancient ones, which are the ones that, like, everybody's so interested in, which could be 2,000 years old, 5,000, 10,000, 100,000, a million, could be coming from off-planet. So anyway, the ones that we have are the new ones. And with my crystal skull I received as a gift, Portal de Luz, I received it at a special conference that happened in Sedona, Arizona, held by Dr. Chet Snow. This was his second crystal symposium where he was bringing together different people who had crystal skulls. So, first of all, I was amazed that there was one that was leaving with me after the conference, and one of this size. And then once I received it, it was like, you know, I had worked with all these other caretakers, and I'd been around all the crystal skulls, but I never had to be responsible for one. So now I had my own, and it was like, okay, what do we do? And the thing that came into me was that I needed to expose it to all the other skulls there that I could, participate in the meditations in the energy vortexes. The people, of course, in the United States know about the energy vortexes in Sedona. Mm-hmm. And it's like after we brought the skull home from this conference, participating in the Mayan sunrise ceremony and the meditations and everything, there started to be like an energy field or a presence around it. So in my meditations with the crystal skull, I said, okay, I'd like to understand, where is the energy coming from? Are these spirits that are working through the crystal? Is this a special spirit that was drawn to this crystal that knew eventually it would come into my possession, and maybe I have a connection with the spirit, you know, from past lives or an agreement that was made before I was born, that at a certain time we meet and we start to work together? And then, too, like I said, I went to Brazil and I met the carver, and I wanted to see who he was to try to figure out what's going on and what's happening. And my conclusion from all of this is that the first thing that is the most important is a period of activation that is required to wake the crystal up. In other words, there is an intelligence within all crystal that's the spirit of the crystal itself. This spirit then says, I give permission, number one, to allow myself to be taken out of the ground, number two, to be put into a different shape, and number three, to become a portal, like my skull is called Portal of Light, to become a portal to allow other spiritual beings or presences to work through. Or number four, which is what I learned from Portal de Luz, is that there is apparently some kind of etheric energy network. And we use this on a meditation that we do for World Peace every Sunday with people who are working with the energy of the crystal skulls, that there's kind of like this, like internet, if you will, but it's with crystal skulls working on a different frequency of energy and on a different dimension, and they can talk to each other when they become activated and these doors that are inside of them open up. So I think what it is the carver, first it's the spirit of the crystal saying, I want to be of service. Then, if it says, I want to be in the shape of a skull, it needs to go to a carver. In our case, the person that's carving, because also Moses of Peace, which is the crystal skull I gave to Daisy as a gift, which is the one she uses primarily for the healing, also came from this carver, is the intention of the carver is also very important, because then he's like preparing the crystal for the person he's going to give it to. I believe, having met the carver of our skull, that there is a part of themselves that they do place in there. However, through our friend Moonhawk, who's in Colorado, who was trained to carve things in a ceremonial way, which I know, Blue Otter, you understand what that means. Mm-hmm. Through that process, he tells me that when he carves the crystal skulls, that he does, there is a spirit that is invited to come in to work with the crystal skull, which then guides him how he carves it. Our carver in Brazil told me the same thing. He says, I look at the crystal and I ask it, how do you want to be carved? and it shows him how, what form it wants to take.
Almost like when we write our books.
Exactly. So in other words, there's this symbiotic relationship that we have between crystals and us. And furthermore, probably both of you know of Marcel Vogel, who was this IBM scientist that got involved with crystal research at the end of his life. He said that crystals have the same vibrational frequency as the bones in our body. What that means is whenever a person is holding a crystal in their hand, it can interact energetically with their entire body. What stops this is, you know, the person's spiritual growth and opening, or if they have emotional or mental problems, things of this nature, this will block the energy. But this is why crystals are so interested to work with us, because we have this symbiotic relationship with them. Now, when it gets put into the shape of the skull, though, and I haven't really researched all the other shapes of crystals, but it seems like there's a whole new level of capabilities. You know, it's like it's a supercomputer or something. But again, the key is how does the crystal get activated? And I always tell people that we don't choose the crystals, they choose us. In the case of Portal de Luz, I thought, oh, I'm just going to get maybe a skull like Daisy has, 3 or 4 pound clear quartz skull, because I was getting ready to go to Peru to look for this blue one again. And I thought, there's no way I want to have a big skull I'm going to carry high up in the mountains where there's no air and you get very tired, you know, when you're climbing the mountains. But 10 pounds is the skull that came in smoky quartz. And I have no complaints, because with Porto, we've had some great adventures before I met Daisy, and it's like different things just go on around the skulls all the time. So I think there's, with the crystal skulls, once they become activated, then there's a whole new set of levels of energy and spirit that comes in. And also the other crystal skulls in the world, if they want to send an energy, like let's say the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, which is probably somewhere in America right now, says, oh, I know Joshua and I know Portal de Luz and Moses of Peace and Daisy. They're going to be in Switzerland in March, and I would like to send a special energy to those people through this etheric crystal network. It could actually send information and energy to the people through our skulls. Because there, you see, this is the key that I've learned through our skulls. It's not just these ancient ones that are important. It's like Grandfather Two Bear, who was a very important elder I met at Mary Thunder's Ranch in Texas. He told me, he said, this is the way it works. The ancient skulls are like, say, the super-powered computers, but they need the newer skulls, which are like their hands and feet, that they can communicate and send energy to so that they can work with these other skulls in all the different parts of the world. One of the things that I find very amazing as I look back over the years I've been involved is when I started in the early 1980s, there were virtually very few new crystal skulls that were available to be sold. Then all of a sudden, starting in the end part of the late 1980s, all of a sudden, all these crystal skulls started coming out from Brazil, and then there was this fella who went to the Chinese carvers, Raven. And now, if you look on eBay, there are like 100 crystal skulls available for sale all the time, and there are now thousands of people who have these new crystal skulls. And I remember when I was interviewed on the radio by Yuri Geller, who actually held Portal de Luz for half an hour. And that's a whole other story of what happened after he did that. He asked me, he said, you know, I'm very interested in peace. How could the crystal skulls or crystals help us for peace? So now, this is what I think is the most important message I could give to your listeners today. And this comes from, you know, working with our crystal skulls. Our World Mystery Research Center has a project we're going to do in the future, which we're already starting now on Sundays. And that is, what if we had people either working with a crystal or a crystal skull, all meditating, doing a similar meditation at the same time, focusing on peace?
You know,
what do you think would happen?
You know what? On Sundays through Pioneer Radio, we run 24 hours on Native, it's a Native American show.
Right.
And I'm wondering maybe if we could put something together on that show. We're at, you know, that I, you know, like maybe once, you know, at a certain point of time that everything
world. It's at a reasonable hour. They can join us.
Maybe you and Blue Water could work something out, and then I could put that segment right on our Native American show every Sunday.
Sure. That would be great, because the information we're getting from the indigenous elders is that many of them, because of their prophecies, and some of these prophecies are very severe, as Blue Otter knows. I just went through three of his books just to see what were the similar things. They're doing a lot of meditation like this for peace and ceremony for peace. And some of the tribes who are holding crystal skulls, which they have not shared publicly to protect them, I know that they're also working with these skulls for the same way. So I believe that this may be something that could really help our world, is by people just doing 5 or 10 minute meditation, focusing on peace.
Well, if you could let us know when you're holding the crystal skull and meditating, I could make sure that same point of time that the radio show picks up on it, so everything's done.
Okay, well, we'll discuss this afterwards then.
Okay.
Because we actually have the meditation on our website.
Okay, great.
We're also going to be coming out with the free book, too, a little small book, which we gave to Blue Otter as well, and we put that meditation in there. So hopefully in March, we're going to be getting this free e-book out so people can really read about the meditation.
Okay, so what the meditation is on your site now, though?
It's on the VJ Enterprise site.
Uh-huh.
I can give you the link. It's www.v-j-enterprises, that's like the Starship Enterprise with an S, .com/csmeditation.html.
Great. Okay.
That's where it is.
Good. We'll use that then.
Yeah.
If it's all right with you, with your permission.
Oh, that's perfect, because I felt when I put together the free ebook, Spirit said you must put this meditation in there because a lot of people are going to join you. And also, too, we just became very good friends with another group in Germany that's doing crystal skull research, that we'll be meeting them next month in Switzerland, and I'm going to talk with them about having their members participate with us, too.
Well, now, didn't the pyramids work with the crystal as well? Wouldn't that have been the reason that there was a pyramid belt? And maybe they were all able to communicate using the pyramids with a crystal.
Well,
I
have heard that possibly, if your listeners believe in this, far in the past when we had some very advanced civilizations here on the planet, like in Atlantis or Lemuria, that they actually had crystal capstones on the pyramid. They're in our first book, which is called Mysteries of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, which is out of print now, but we still have some copies of that, too, if the listeners are interested. There was a man who worked with a crystal skull called the Mayan Crystal Skull and had a vision where he saw these very tall beings using the power of their mind, changing a crystal ball into a crystal skull, and standing behind them were these pyramids with crystal capstones. So I definitely believe that there is a connection between crystals and the pyramids. It could be that sometimes they built the pyramids over areas where there were quartz crystals in the ground, possibly.
Well, I'm thinking that the pyramids were built on a very strong ley line.
Oh, yes.
You know, an energy point.
Yes, they talk about that too.
Yes. And if it was built on a very strong energy point like that, and then combine that with the crystal as a capstone.
Yep, then it could be very powerful.
Well, let me mention that we'll be having the spokesman from Monataka, the place of peace, which is near Hot Springs, Arkansas. Not too far from there is an entire mountain that's nothing but crystal, and it is the only, I don't recall the name of the mountain. I'll see if I can get it up here.
We're going to be going down there, Blue Water. Maybe we can do a film documentary on that one as well.
Well, it's the only mountain in the world that has that name, and it is, can't remember, I'll get the name in here in a second, but anyway, it's, that the name of that mountain is mentioned in sacred writings from...
Would be Mount Zion, would it?
No, I'll find it here in a second. But it's the only mountain in the world with that name, and it was mentioned in sacred...
Blue Water's trying to figure out the name there. Now, there's a lot of people that wear crystal nowadays.
Right.
Do you think that it helps to wear crystal? Or because I've heard some people say that works, in the metaphysics, that sometimes too much exposure of crystal is not good for you either.
I agree with both positions. What I've learned from working with crystals is there is a 30 days or longer period of time where you have to become acquainted with each other. And that's where you don't allow anyone else to work with your crystal. And, you know, you do your personal meditation or you hold it or whatever. But it takes a period of time to acclimate to the enhanced energy that you might receive. But there are some people who are just too sensitive to energy that if they are given certain crystals, it could, like, blow their circuits. So I think the key is that a person has to, number one, not logically figure out which crystal they want, but intuitively or go by a feeling which one is right for them. Because I think what happens is crystals come to you, they help you in a certain way, and then you pass them to somebody else, and then you're ready for the next one.
Oh, really?
Same thing with the crystal skulls. Like, for example, if somebody's a beginner, I might recommend that they don't immediately go see one of the ancient crystal skulls, because those crystal skulls have a very powerful energy around them, and some people literally cannot deal with the intensity of that. It drives them crazy.
See, well, there's a reason, actually, I'm asking is because, see, I have a problem wearing crystals.
Okay.
You know, like if I wear, you know, like I had some beautiful earrings, you know, the double terminals.
Okay.
And, but my ears would just, I mean, they would just burn. They just turn real red. It just starts burning.
Don't forget, you're a Cherokee, and our DNA and crystals are intertwined. And so you may have to begin dealing with crystals on a different level. You may have to have
maybe a smoky quartz.
Yeah, some kind of crystal that's been doctored.
Or go with a darker colored quartz that's more grounding. Acclimate yourself and then move up.
Oh, to you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of WiseFoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year's supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingraham, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why.
Well, what causes, because even I can't wear even a necklace, you know. I can for just a little bit at a time, and then after that, you know, I just start burning.
Okay, have you worked with other types of gemstones besides quartz?
No.
Okay, what I would suggest that you do is, you know, they have these stores where they have all kinds of minerals from all over the world.
Uh-huh.
Just go into one of those stores one day and just touch and hold different stones. And I have a feeling, this is what I'm hearing from my guide, that you'll find a different kind of stone that will work better for you than quartz. I think that what's happening for you is wherever you are in your spiritual development right now, you need a different kind of energy to work with, and eventually you'll be able to come back to the courts, but that it's not the right energy for you right now. It's just, it's too much, you're too sensitive to it, and you have to know how to work with the energy. But the same thing you asked me before, oh, you got to sleep with that amethyst crystal skull, and I really didn't have, you know, like profound dreams or anything, because my body over 20 years had acclimated to all the different crystal skulls I've seen. It's like, you know, each one I saw, they made adjustments into my energy field. So with a lot of the crystal skulls we see, like we're going to see this new one next month, I don't know how I'll respond. I might feel nothing. I might feel a lot of energy, or I might have dreams. You just never know. So I would suggest in your case that you look at some other gemstones for right now and go by color. That's your key. Mm-hmm. What are the colors that you're drawn to? That's the stones you should work
with. Well, I'm drawn to purple.
Okay, so then you don't want to work amethyst. But you can work with other purple stones that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And by the way, I found out that is Mount Ida, I-D-A.
Oh, okay, Mount Ida.
Place in the world that's called Mount Ida, and it's mentioned in...
Well, wait, there's a Mount Ida. I think there's a Mount Ida blue otter in just every state. There's a town called... I know that we have a Mount Ida here in Wisconsin.
This is just what I was told. It may have been... the first place in the United States with Mount Ida.
But I do know that I have heard about Mount Ida in Arkansas, though. It's supposed to be very high in spirituality. It's a very mystical. It's a very mystical place to go.
Yeah. So it's probably laying on the ley lines, like you say.
Yeah.
Those lines.
You know, it's really, really interesting. I've got a book that's in the mail me right now. It was called The Traditions of Dikuda.
The what?
Dikuda. Dikuda. D-E-C-O-O-D-A-H.
Oh.
And the book, when it was first published in 1858 and up until recently, and still is laughed at by a lot of people because supposedly what was taught by the Dikuda was the last prophet of the Elk Nation. They were Algonquin people, and William Pidgeon was... surveying and studying the mounds just east of St. Louis, and met Dikuda. And but for a long time, the concept that the mound builders were a tall white-skinned people was accepted, and then more recently, it's been derided mostly by political pressure from Native Americans. But it's really interesting. There's probably some truth to it because. About who the mound builders were, because the very first publication to introduce the concept of ley lines was the Traditions of Dikuda. And as to who the mound builders were, all the Cherokee know is that they were very tall and light skinned, and we intermarried with them. And since then, our men have been much taller than probably a head taller than the average Native American, and our women tend to be. Well, the men tend to be more tan, and the women tend to be more of a milky complexion, but are still, rather short. But the mound builders are part of Cherokee DNA now. We encountered them, and it's amazing what the ebbs and flows and tides of archaeologists and ethnologists, who they think we are, as opposed to who we say we are.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, how do you? You said though that people need to acclimate themselves to crystal. How do they go about doing that?
Well, I think based on the experiences we're having with the skulls, which are quartz crystal, it's just meditation, taking it with you when you go out, sleeping with the crystal under your pillow. But basically, the real key to working with crystal is the crystal will tell you how to work with it. And it's just being receptive enough to be able to hear that. I think what happens with most people, and this is true of anything, is they try something for a day or two, it doesn't work, and they give up. And usually what happens is, in order to acclimate to crystal, you really need a good month or 2 months or 3 months of working with it consistently. Because what most people do, you know, they'll go and they'll see a beautiful stone or a beautiful crystal and they'll buy it. And they never touch it. They just leave it. it on their shelf and say, oh, it's very beautiful and I like to have it here. And I think that the crystals, which are living beings in their own way, that they want to have this interaction with humans, because I think in a way they grow spiritually too by having the contact with us. And I also remember there was a book by Marion Bradley Zimmer called House Between the Worlds. She wrote, Mist of Babylon. But she also wrote this book, House Between the Worlds. And she said, you know, when you go from dimension to dimension, things will change what their form is. Like, for example, if you have a pencil, maybe it'll become a glass. But quartz crystal does not change its shape when it goes from dimension to dimension.
Oh, really?
So if this is true, that means that all the pieces of quartz are dimensional doors to other places. And I don't know why this came to me one day. I just was, you know, I have my term, I'm minding my own business, and this thought came into me, and it said, you know, quartz crystals did not originate on the planet Earth. They were brought here as a tool to help humanity grow and expand spiritually. And because that's what they do. What is quartz crystal doing in our electronics? It's boosting an electrical current, and it's keeping that current steady. Well, quartz crystal works in the same way with a person. It amplifies the essence of who they are, and it helps them to integrate more with their spiritual energies. And according to some of these elders I interviewed for our book, the Native American people already understand this about crystal, although one of the people I interviewed, I think he's from one of the tribes in the Six Nations, he said, you know, from our perspective, we've heard about the crystal skulls, and we know that the people like in Mexico, they're working with them, but and we honor them, but we do know at least about quartz crystals. So I think that's the way, you know, how to acclimate. But really the key is to be spontaneous with the quartz crystal. Like, for some reason, you just feel, oh, I have to pick it up, and I need to go to this place and do a meditation. This is the way in which we found that it works the best. When you get out of your own way and you just let the energy of working with the crystal kind of guide you what it is that you need to do. And this is also, of course, true for, you know, where we're heading as the race of humanity. We're going from a more male logical orientation that we have to do step A, step B, step C, to more of an intuitive, spontaneous, flowing, creative energy so that we can have more peace and harmony on the planet, more of the balance between the masculine and the feminine. And that's another thing that I feel the crystals help people with, is that balance, to bring up more of whatever they're missing. If they're a woman and they don't have working so much with the masculine energy, it can help to bring that up, and vice versa for a man.
Fascinating.
So just some ideas. I mean, this comes from just working with the crystals. I don't like to read books about crystals. I rather just have the experience with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with the skulls. You know, if I see a new one, I'd rather just sit with it and see what happens. Sometimes you'll connect with them, and then they'll talk to you after you leave. Wherever you are, you can start communicating with them, because there are several crystal skulls I've seen that, you know, whenever I think about them, they're there, especially this blue one that I've mentioned, which, you know, I don't know, is it real, is it not real, but every time I think about it, it's standing there right in front of me in my mind's eye, and I can touch it. And I've had other people, when I talk about it in the lectures, say, yes, Joshua, I see that crystal skull you're talking about. Daisy has also seen it as well. So, huh? Well, she held it in Peru when she went into the inner dimensions. So she's, she's not farther along, because you know what happened? You know, on, November 11th, we had the harmonic, what was it called, the convergence or,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Daisy and I were in Poland, and that's completely different work. What we do in Poland is completely different than what we normally do, like in England or in America or whatever, because the people there really need a lot of healing work. And so we did a meditation, and for me, the blue skull the first time, because it shows me that it's two pieces, the jaw is separate from the top part. I actually heard the two pieces, you know, when two pieces of crystals hit each other, it makes a sound.
Uh-huh.
I don't hear sounds like that, and I heard the blue skull make that sound to me. So that was pretty cool. So where would you like to go next on the crystal skull?
Well, I'm going to throw something at you, okay? Because I've been playing around with this idea.
Okay.
I got it off of, there's this author, his name is Bruce Cathy. Oh, you do know him? Oh, good.
Yeah, I wrote him a letter, and he sent a letter back.
Oh, great. Well, he wrote the book, Pulse of the Universe Harmonic, 88.
Okay.
Are you familiar with it? Well, basically, in a nutshell, he's talking about Earth grids and ley lines.
Right.
And, you know, of course, we've always had that magic number of 144,000. Okay, you hear what various religious groups, Jehovah Witnesses are good at this one, say that at the end times there will only be 144,000 that goes to heaven. All right.
And recently they found out mathematically that has something to do with the speed of light.
Well, through Bruce Cathy's work, he says that gosh darn it, I had it right here in front of me. Okay, there's a, the 144,000 equals one arc per grid. Now you got all your Earth grids, right? Well, one grid, okay, he's talking about 144,000 equals one arc per grid. And 144,000 souls are in a soul family.
Okay.
And, you know, I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that was really interesting because they're saying 140, so the various religious groups are saying only 144,000 are going to go to heaven. Well, if there's 144,000 in a soul family, and that soul family, and there's 144,000 equals at one arc per grid, then that soul family would, chances are, would be from what he said, what a soul family would represent a grid,
mm-hmm.
an earth grid, a one arc, which is one arc,
okay.
equaling 144,000.
I also feel that the 144,000 is a symbolic number that relates to, like, I don't know the book you're talking about, but I know Harmonics 33 I read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what it is, and this actually comes out with the crystal skulls too, and it
yeah.
goes into the Bible code, is numbers. There are certain special numbers that have frequencies that are connected to these numbers.
And these frequencies have to be arcs. Or frequencies would be an arc, right?
No, not necessarily.
No?
It's more of vibrational energy, or it could be music, which also can be translated into numbers.
But couldn't an arc produce that harmonic sound?
Well, the problem is I don't know what he means by arc.
Yeah.
Well, if he's talking about ley lines, he may have been talking about degrees of arc, because in a circle there's 360 degrees of arc.
Right, but so how would 144,000 come up with 360 degrees?
Well, I don't know. All he's saying, all I've got here is 144,000 equals one arc per grid, and there's 144,000 souls per soul family.
Okay, well, that part, the soul family, I could understand, because soul family means different people who are connected to the same oversoul, that where the oversoul splits, so it can have multiple experiences for itself, so it's kind of like a family of souls that are interconnected,
mm-hmm.
like an inverted tree. But as far as this arc part, I don't understand what he's talking about. The essence that I get from his work is he's found the sacred numbers that are related to, like, the circumference of the earth or pi, or where the ancients determined they're going to build their temples and things like that. It's all based on sacred geometry and sacred mathematics.
Yeah, he says the harmonic value of... I'm just going to go 3928371 is of extreme importance as it has a direct relationship with the Earth's magnetic field. The harmonic value the harmonic 648 also has many interesting associations, in particular the harmonic table for temperature.
Yeah. Well, that's what he's good at, is he understands what these harmonics are and how they can apply to, you know, things that are going on in the real world. But it's almost like these numbers are the sacred science that's behind all of reality. That's what has been prophesied, I think, Blue Otter, is that all of this sacred knowledge and information is going to start to come out now.
Apparently, the
The speed of light in nautical miles is 144,000 nautical miles, but 186,000 statute miles. So there's also some other discovery that's been found lately that there's a relationship between the speed of light and 144,000. I just can't remember exactly what it was.
Right. It's the same thing with the pyramids. They measure it in cubits, and you come up with, when you measure the Great Pyramid, it has so many cubits to it. That's, again, these sacred numbers. So the sacred geometry has followed many civilizations, and they just understood this. And these are the kinds of things that are coming back now to us, is to have this understanding. It's the same thing like with Fenchue, or I forgot, we just had a gentleman from India. They have a certain science that they're studying, which is based on the same thing about how you build buildings and where you build buildings and different energies and things like that. So all of this is just...
Well, from what I understand, that a lot of sacred sites were built on these high energy points of the ley lines, and then the churches, knowing that these people knew where these power points were, they took over the sacred sites and built the churches on them.
Yeah, and that's what you find, I think, at many archaeological sites, is you'll see one city is on top of another city, on top of another city, because the people knew that these were special places. Absolutely.
And these special places are giving off this this high frequency of some sort, harmonic.
Yes.
I know. I lived in the Southwest, in that Red Rock country, the Arches National Park, that area down near Moab, Utah. And we had a friend that was leasing a square mile from the state of Utah. There was a sandstone mountain that looked from the air like a turtle turning counterclockwise. And he blasted five homes and a bed and breakfast back into this rock. And we lived in there for a while, and at night there was no electrical current or any kind of artificial current running through the homes at all, because the current's turned off, generator's not running. And every morning we would wake up and we could hear the vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And see, there's quartz, because there's also gold that's in that red sand. There's also quite a bit of quartz crystal in that sand.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
I think what we were hearing was that singing sound, and my wife could hear it. I could hear it. I could hear volume spikes that she couldn't hear. But we both, when I sang the frequency through her, we agreed it was both the same. And even sometimes, we live 22 miles south of Moab, in the middle of the desert there. And sometimes when there wasn't any traffic, we'd be standing outside
working in the garden that we could hear.
Well, they said that in these desert areas, the sand actually sings because of the crystal.
That would have to be it.
Yep, can be. There are many mysteries in our world.
And one of the most fascinating mysteries is the crystal. Now, you think that they're using our collective consciousness more or less for us to start producing then the new crystals, because the old crystal skulls need the new crystal skulls now to create something coming in the future, or today.
This is what I feel. The ancient crystal skulls have been programmed by societies that no longer exist. So in this way, I think your idea is correct. And it's difficult for people in the modern society to deal with these energies that come from a time and place that they can't, really relate to. Now, with the new crystal skulls, they're being programmed with the energies of today, but they also, because we've taken our skulls we have, and they've been in the presence of the ancient ones, they do exchanges. For example, I can tell you the story that happened to us in England, since you have some people who will be listening there. There was one crystal skull we visited called Scully.
And this is at the British Museum?
No, this is another one, which I think is an ancient one. But again, I can't prove it because it's just based on being in the presence of it for 15 or 20 minutes and what I felt from it. And both Daisy and I felt that there was a masculine presence that was overshadowing a feminine presence inside of the skull. And it was the feminine presence that was calling out for help. Like that was the original spiritual being, if you will, that was in charge of the skull or was working through the skull. And all we did is we walked in first just to see the skull, and then I felt like we had to come back with our crystal skulls and just do an exchange. And as soon as we walked in there, the energy completely shifted, and this masculine energy immediately left. Now, the reason I bring up...
Really?
Now, the reason I bring this up is, what is happening with our crystal skulls? Okay, first of all, the carver in Brazil, these three we had made these crystal skulls. So he's getting the crystal from the ground in Brazil, which, by the way, the energy in Brazil is unbelievable. I don't know what's going on there, but the people there, they're saying is out of every 10 people you meet, 11 are psychic. And in the ground, and the energy in the ground is just very powerful, dimensional doors, or I don't know. It's like a different world. And so the crystal is coming from this area that has these powerful energies, and the carver's making them. But what we have done with ours is we've taken them to sacred sites. We've put them in the crop circles. I don't know how many people have worked with our skulls now through our consultations and our public meetings, but I would say several thousand. They've sat next to ancient crystal skulls. And what we've seen is that through all of these experiences that they have, this activation process, they develop a life of their own. And because they are new skulls, I can go from country to country, and I don't have to worry about what the custom agents say. Oh, we're looking for these ancient skulls that were stolen from the tombs of our country. We want them back.
Mm-hmm.
We have a piece of paper with a bill that says we bought this crystal skull. It was made in Brazil. So, you know, it's just our meditation stone, or it's just what we work with. So there's no problem to travel with it. But what happens is these new ones are gathering and collecting energies, and they are sharing them with these older skulls, which are not so mobile. Like, for example, this crystal skull, amethyst crystal skull, Ami, has only come out of the case that they've held it in probably two times since 1983, or three times since 1983. And so it's like sitting there, and it's dying because it wants to have contact with people. It wants to be out into the world and sharing energy and dealing with people, and it wants to have contact with its brothers and sisters. So for me to be sitting with our three skulls for an entire night, that was like, a fabulous dessert, you know, for that crystal skull. But what happened was, is I noticed when we're in Poland, where we're doing our healing, there were three people who had some problem with a vein in their brain, and each one of them selected Portal de Luz. And what I understood from what I was watching is Portal de Luz received this gift from Ami, the amethyst skull, because this is exactly the problem that our friend Al had, who's one of the owners of the skull. He had a problem with a vessel in the brain. They had to do a surgery on it. He became a vegetable. But then he was able to communicate to his family, put my head next to the crystal skull, and after 2 or 3 months of doing that, he regained all of his abilities.
Really?
Yeah. So what I saw was his Ami passed to Portal this gift, and he passed to Moses. Daisy, what did he pass for Moses? Do you notice? For headaches. Migraine. People have headaches or migraines, then me past that. But what I'm saying in this crystal skull in England, which was calling out for help, this was our interpretation of it. And the caretaker was sitting there, and he said, oh, yes, the energy in the room did shift. I felt that. It's our new skulls, which are free to travel, were able to help to relieve the situation with that one to free it up. And the same thing happened with the British crystal skull, the one in the museum you asked us about. Again, this crystal skull has been in a glass case. People can see it through the glass case, but very few people are allowed to touch it. And we were just given permission because we're researchers. Daisy got a chance to meditate with it. I meditated with it. When Daisy meditated with it, she remembered her lifetime working with that skull as a Mayan priestess, right? Priestess. And also, the other thing, priest. And also, well, that's confirmation because what comes out of Daisy's mouth while she's holding this skull, this masculine voice that says, you with the white shirt pointing at me, take a picture. So I took a picture of her. But when I meditated with the British crystal skull, it was like I had my, where was it? And Daisy was the same. She had her left hand on Moses of Peace. I had my left hand on Portal de Luz. The right hand was on the British crystal skull. And I felt that the only reason I was sitting there wasn't so I could experience the energy of the skull. It was so I could be a conduit to try to pass some frequencies of energy from our skulls into the British crystal skull because it's not free to travel. Then we got an email from a woman that visited that skull like a week or so after us and got a healing from it. So did our visit have something to do with that? I don't know. But so you see, with these different crystal skulls, the old or the new, there is a symbiotic relationship between them. You cannot just say, we're just going to study the ancient ones. You won't understand them. You have to study the new ones too, because the new ones are teaching us some things about the ancient ones and vice versa. They're all working together.
So now, if the listeners hearing this want to get a new crystal skull, what are the steps for them? They just go buy one and then just what? What do they do with it then? And what should they expect?
Okay. Well, first of all, they have to decide how are they going to buy the skull. They can, like I said before, they could go to eBay and they can get it. They can go into a crystal store and ask for it. There are some people have websites that sell it. We also make skulls available to people that we meet as we're traveling. But the thing that we do that's a little bit different is we always have the new skulls that we get sit with ours, so that it can start to help to open up the skulls for the person they're going to go to. But going farther with your question, so if somebody says, okay, I'm attracted, I want to get a crystal skull, what do I do with it? It's the same process I talked about with the regular crystal. They have to work with it privately for so many days, and they'll know when that period is done. Like I said, it could be 2 days, it could be 30 days, it could be a whole year. But they need to have contact with the crystal skull, meditate with it, so that their energy and the energy of the crystal skull almost like merge into one will. The next step to activate it is now you have this child, which we're calling a crystal skull. It wants to experience the world and life. And so the caretaker, that's what we call people who have the skulls, not the owner, but the caretaker, will take the crystal skull as they feel guided, like maybe they have a special place. They like to go in a forest or by a lake to do a meditation. Or in our case, you know, they have crop circles here in Europe. So if we hear about, oh, in Holland they've got new crop circles, we might take the crystal skull there. If there's an ancient crystal skull that's nearby, oh, you bet Daisy and I are first in line. We want to go so that the skulls can talk to each other and exchange energies. And then after the crystal skull is more activated, then the person has the choice if they want to actually do some work with it. Do they want to do, like we talked about the meditation on Sunday, meditate with their crystal skull with all these other people that are meditating? Or do they want to do like what Daisy and I are doing, where we have our consultations, where people will sit with us and they'll pick which of our skulls, you know, we have usually six or seven sitting in front of them, they want to hold during the session so they can have their own experience. And then we do the healing work with them, or I answer questions for them. And the crystal skull is giving them some energy. The crystal skull communicates with the caretaker how the two together, because without the human, the crystal skull cannot go anywhere, how the two together can work to offer service to other people. So that's kind of the steps that they've taught us, how it works. But again, when I listen to the stories of other people who have the new skulls, everyone is unique, everyone is different, everyone has their own process, and it's like during the period of time where you get to know your crystal skull, you start to develop some form of communication with it, whether you actually hear it, or you feel it, or you wake up and you just know what you have to do with it. And through that communication, then the crystal skull starts to explain, here is my suggestion how to work together. The personal story on that is when I received Portal de Luz was in April of 1999. And, you know, I was at a conference where there were all these other ancient skulls, and I was kind of a little embarrassed because I just have this new one I just received, and I figured all the people want to work with the ancient ones, but the owners of the ancient skull said, no, no, it's okay, you can put your crystal skulls with ours and meditate with ours so that they can work together, because all of them are important. So for the first beginning part of the process, you know, I just meditated with it. Then all of a sudden some people called me up and say, we want to see a crystal skull. And I said, well, you know, I have one, it's just a new one, and I don't know what your experience will be. And they came over and visited, and they had some very profound experiences around this crystal skull. And then the next thing I know, I'm meditating with Portal de Luz, and he says, okay, it's time for us to go to Peru for our next trip. So we go into Peru, and when we come back, then he says, all right, now it's time for you to do your spiritual work. You have to, you know, not do a traditional job anymore. Just do your spiritual work. And that was in September of 1999. So I've been just doing the work with the crystal skull since that time.
Well, you know how I'm seeing this by listening to you is we have a Roadrunner cable. And we have like a little box there, you know, on our TV sets, you know, that brings in the channels, right?
Right.
And there's a certain program that you hit and it records. So the information comes in, you click a button, it records it and retains that information.
Right.
So later on, if you want to watch that show again, it's there.
Right.
Okay? And I'm also thinking, okay, so I have, this is my, one of my thoughts there. And my second thought was, I'm seeing like the old-fashioned radio sets, how the old-fashioned radios used to have crystal. And the crystal was used to transmit and receive radio waves.
Right.
Okay, and then you turn on the radio and you get sound, right, and listen to a audio program. So, and since then, we've advanced into television, and now we're able to save. And it seems to me that these the crystal skulls were more or less on the same idea of the fiber optics that used and the crystals used, you know, nowadays, where they're like a psychic transmitter and receiver that can save information.
Absolutely.
You know, so when you take the new skull and you put it next to the old skull, it's almost like with Roadrunner cable, you can click that button and it says, take this information from this other source and put it on save.
Absolutely.
So that I can hear later what it has to say.
But the transference is going both ways.
Yeah.
The old skull, which cannot travel as much as the newer ones, is saying, I want to experience what you're seeing with
yeah.
the people that you're meeting.
Well, that would be like our computers then, so where
yes.
you can communicate back and forth and save the information back and forth with each other, right?
Exactly.
You know, if I were a skull, I'd be thinking, you know, these humans, you know, they're so stupid. Just because I'm old,
yeah.
they think that I should travel because I'm too valuable or
yeah.
I got a museum someplace. I mean, that'd be a horrible thing.
Well, man is turning around, and we're using what our elders that were more advanced they use psychic technology, where we are turning the psychic, we're trying to harness that psychic energy or technology, or psychic energy, and turning it into a man-type technology, where we use wires, fiber optics, you know, different computer chips and everything else, whereas actually we really don't even need to do that if we go back to the old ways and just use the crystal and let the crystal do the work for us psychically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I know my wife went through a Chickamauga Cherokee healing ceremony, and in the, of course, in Chickamauga way, we're told that the ceremony involves use of a crystal, a vessel of water, and after the healing ceremony, the crystal will turn a certain color. The color would indicate, you know, which part or humor of the body, and therefore it would be affected, and the crystal turned yellow. And so she was given a gourd with fresh water in it, and put the yellow crystal into the gourd of water. And the gourd of water is a proxy for your own body in our way. And for instance, say a chief has to be disciplined or did something horrible, and it has to be declared to be a persona non grata in their absence. Know, they're represented by a gourd full of water. Well, anyway, after the yellow crystal was placed in the gourd full of water, she went and vomited up bile, which indicated she had a bile imbalance. And of course, in Ayurvedic medicine tradition, you know, there are four humors, and so she had a bile imbalance and felt a lot better after that.
Mm-hmm.
But they either. Crystal was part and parcel of healing her at that point.
Hmm.
I agree with you, Mary. I think what's happening is that many of the things that were done long ago are coming back. And the wisdom, the knowledge, the spiritual gifts, I think that humanity lived this way a long time ago, and then it went through some periods of darkness, and now we're returning to this golden age, if you will. So
prophesied is it was in the Hopi say that all of the old medicine societies will be revealed once again, and
yeah.
That everything will go back like it was in the beginning. As far as the Bible speaks of this time as being the time of the restitution of all things, when all of things spoken of by all the mouths of all the holy prophets will be fulfilled.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Before I called you guys and we would start doing this interview, I was interviewing this other gentleman that he's a movie producer, and he had did this movie at the Milwaukee airport, and as he was editing the film, he actually seen these UFOs coming and going, but they could not see them, you know, as they were filming, all right?
Right.
And they were very obvious on the film. And he brought up this thing because he said that he went and he talked to this physicist, right? And the physicist said, or gave an analogy like this. He says, you know, he says, people just do not realize all the things that are around them. He says, and people, they view things according to their position. He used the analogy of a person that would be in a train, and the windows are all closed, so you can't see outside the window, and the person was born and raised in this train for years, and the train goes back and forth, and to him that was his world, okay? And then at some point in time, that person, somebody comes along and opens up the curtains, or pulls up the curtains, where the person can look out that window and see everything moving by. Well, the thing is, all of a sudden, you know, he's looking at this other world and seeing everything moving by fast. And up until that point in time, that part of the world did not even exist. But it really does exist.
Yeah. And that's, again, like Blue Outer said, it's part of the prophecies that there is these invisible worlds, you know, like the nature spirits. I believe that people used to be able to communicate and see them directly, and then they went into a different dimension. They're still there. It's just that our physical senses aren't able to detect them.
Yeah.
Or what's been happening to me recently, sometimes in the bedroom, I've seen these lights flash at me. And maybe 20 or 30 years ago, if you said, hey, you know, I see these colored lights flashing at me, say, okay, we're taking you to the mental institution. But what that is, it's the bleed-through into our reality of maybe some spiritual beings that are in the room or something, that we can only perceive them as light. Sometimes, as you know, we have a radio set, right? And if you want to hear a certain station, you have to dial to that station so you can hear it. But those radio waves are all around us.
Yeah. Because
we don't have the device that can receive it. Well, could the same thing be said of whatever we believe to be God? Could God literally be all around us? Everything that we see is part of this, you know, creator, but we just don't have the ability to tune into those frequencies to see it. And that's why I also believe, too, that the Mother Earth is shifting her energy and frequency, and as she's becoming higher and higher in her vibration and frequency, this is activating these gifts within people that they are also able to start to experience these other realities. So it would be the same thing like this film director. Nobody saw the UFOs, but the cameras picked it up because they were sensitive enough to feel the vibrational frequencies of the UFOs. Same
mm-hmm.
things happen in haunted houses, you know, where people are taking pictures and all of a sudden there's a ghost there that you didn't see.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is all signs of the times and the prophecies, I believe.
And yeah. So in other words, reality is based on the observer.
Yeah, exactly.
Because exactly. And that's based on where he's at that particular time.
Right.
And
unfortunately,
flight.
On our planet right now, we have, I don't know, how many billions of people here, each with their own reality, and we're not all matching.
Yeah.
And I believe that normally on a planet, most people are at the same level, but this planet Earth is very unique because we have all different kind of people here. We have all different kind of cultures. You have people living very primitively. You have advanced technologies. I don't think this is the normal way that planets evolve. So we're
yeah.
kind of an oddity with all this diversity that we have here on this one little planet.
It's kind of like we're in between channels with a lot of static electricity.
Oh,
with a lot of static.
Have you read the Urantia book?
Pardon?
Have either one of you read the Urantia book?
No.
I've glanced at it, but I wasn't really drawn to read it.
4,000 pages in it.
Yeah.
But basically, the deal with that is that because of the aborted issue that happened at the time of the coming of Adam and Eve, because the book says that on normal planets, as part of the process, an Adam and Eve are sent, and they are sent to bring all of the different colors or races to one focal point to make one race.
Yeah.
And then after that, planets progress after having been brought into basically one color. But that because of what happened here, because the rebellion happened here, and not only here, but a part of a system of planets that we belong to, and that we are an extremely diverse planet, and that's the reason why we're attracting so much attention when we get some so many visitors. And but it points out that, you know, our planet, you know, there's several thousand other planets that that were all created more or less at the same time and run by the same group of administrators, but that we may actually have planets that are millions of years older that are actually closer.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is interesting when you think about that.
Well, I had this one person contacted me. I can't remember the book he wrote right now, but he's an adept or an initiate. He's been about 3 years in a cave up on top of Mount Meru. And he was saying, and so he was able to go into Shambhala, you know, on, and he said that the people of Shambhala that he was talking to said that the reason people don't see Shambhala is because it's so big, but it's right here, but we just can't see it because of the size of it.
Could be.
I don't know, but there again, you know, it's you know, I don't know.
I don't know. Well, it just shows that there is so much to this one planet, so much that's going on, and I think it's really an incredible time to be alive because so many things are just coming out, information and knowledge. If you went back 100 years, people wouldn't even be thinking about these things, and yet through the advances of the internet and people's ability to communicate with each other, and now that the planet's going into this higher frequency, people are having experiences and getting all kinds of information. So it's a pretty amazing time to be here.
Well, something happened in the 60s. There's no doubt about that because, I mean, you know, we have we had the hippie movement, we had the war movement, we had the movement, you know, for you know, bringing the black, you know, the blacks and the whites and everybody together, you know, so take away, you know,
hippies fulfilling the Hobie prophecy.
And the hippies started to fulfill, and then that was the and another big thing that happened was psychedelic drugs. I mean, because you know. Well, it was when was it? In the late 60s is when they finally made them illegal. But the early 60s, psychedelic drugs was totally legal. And of course, they got out on the street and everybody started taking them. And, you know, it alters your perception. And so the people were able to start seeing, you know, they've seen things that, you know, that they normally wouldn't see. And then all of a sudden they're saying, well, wait a minute, maybe there's more to life than what we thought that was before we started taking the drug. And the Indians, they use peyote, you know, for, you know, their spiritual quest. You know, there's a lot. The Africans, they have I can't remember what they use, but,
you know, they use all kinds of different.
Yeah. But, I mean, what it does is it shuts down one side of your brain and opens up the other side, you know, that's more tuned into, you know, your spiritual world. No.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and you know, and like you said, the only thing that really doesn't ever change is the crystal. You know.
Yeah, that's what we believe. It goes from dimension to dimension, and it stays the same because it's kind of like this dimensional portal. And so if people are working with the crystal, it means that it's easier for them to be in touch with their spirit guides. It's going to wake up their own gifts, so they're going to experience these things that are always going on around us. And I believe it's one of the most important tools for awakening humanity that exists right now is the quartz crystals. And,
yeah.
And then, too, looking at our electronics is based on it as well.
Well, now, doesn't the birds carry a little crystal or something in their brain, you know, for navigation? Or am I wrong?
No, that's it's a metallic substance.
I don't know about that.
Their brains.
No.
No, I don't know about that. So, Blue Otter, did you have any questions for us related to the book that we sent you, some things you were reading?
Well, yeah, I noticed that you knew Joseph Big Feather.
Yes, I do.
He was one of the earliest people that I was able to get in touch with, and with Two Feathers. And at that time, they were going through. They really didn't know whether they wanted to come out or not.
Yeah.
And Duke wanted to come out and support some things, but some of the clan mothers overruled him. But anyway, Duke and I are extended family members, and there's been a real quandary among Native Americans as to whether or not the prophetic teachings are to be taught. A lot of disagreement, and some of it is nice, and some of it can be rather violent. But I think the majority of them agree that now is the time, and you really have to hand it to the Hopi elders, because they're the ones that really broke the story back in the 60s when they came out with this, and started some of the Iroquois elders that started the White Roots of Peace Council, which was a meeting that was supposed to happen in a different quarter of the United States every year. But you got to hand to them, because they were very brave during that period of time, and they're misunderstood by their own people even up to this day, especially the Hopi elders.
Yeah.
So we owe them a lot.
Yeah. You know, I went to Prophecy Stone, and what was interesting when I went there is I had this medallion I was wearing, which was like a sand painting, I think, from the Navajo, and it fell off. Never had fallen off before.
So okay, the prophecy route, rock out to at Hopi.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I went there, 1992, I think it was, and this little sand painting, you know, medallion I was wearing, it just fell off. So I buried it under the rock. I figured that was what I was supposed to leave to honor the prophecy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I was going through your book, I felt, of all the ones I was reading, and I mean, you have so many prophecies in your book, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, 100. Well, just in the Western Hemisphere, which is the indigenous people, 160 articles representing 60 nations, but I'm baffled by it myself.
Yeah, but I felt like the Hopi seemed to be the clearest for me, because so many things they said have happened. The only thing, though, is I was reading in your book when the Hopi grandfathers came online. Mm-hmm. They were talking about World War III.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not quite sure about if there would be a World War III or not. I mean, we may be going through it, right?
You know, actually, I think we went through World War III up until 1991, whenever it was, the wall came down.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in World War IV now.
Okay.
Or an extension of World War III. It's just a low-intensity conflicts, and they... And low-intensity conflict, well, Jesus said, wars and rumors of war. That's where we are now. A rumor of war.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I wasn't sure about that one part. So I'm hoping one day maybe I can talk to one of their elders and see how they qualified that, because that was one part. But did you know that Duke was the one who was involved in our marriage?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew he could officiate.
Yeah, what we did is we got a rabbi and Duke, and we had the canopy from the Jewish that we were married under. This was in Chicago, December 21st, 2002, 10 years before the special date by the Mayans.
Wow.
And all our crystal skulls there with us and pictures of other ones. And then Duke did the Native American part for the marriage.
And
Daisy wore a traditional Native American Indian wedding dress, and I wore a Civil War general's uniform.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. We have pictures on our website. I'll show it to you after.
Why did you choose that type of uniform?
Well, there is no doubt in my mind that I was, in a past life, I was involved in the Civil War.
Okay.
When I was a small child, my father worked for a toy store, and he got these army men, and it was like I was fascinated. I wanted to wear the hat, play with the army men. When we had the family that came from Tennessee or something, I remember I told my father, did they know they're from the South and they lost?
Yeah.
You know? So, but, and I have been to the Civil War battlefields, and I have felt spirits that have come up to me, and I've worked with the Crystal Skull and Pasha Bell's Canon and D to try to help to release them. And I also met somebody in Utah who recognized me from the Civil War, and we were able to come up with what I think I may have been. But I'm still researching it, so I'd rather not say, because, you know, sometimes people say, oh, I was this person and that person, and they were fairly well known, and that's all we focus on. So I'm still kind of researching that. But
what happened with Daisy was that she remembers me from that lifetime. After the war was over, I had to go out into the Indian country, and we met, and we fell in love. But unfortunately, I was married, and I had to go back. And she had some children from me, which were half-breeds that I think you said the white settlers killed them, and it just tore her apart. So we felt that for our marriage that we needed to honor that in that lifetime we couldn't marry, but this time that we married, so we wanted to, you know, kind of bridge that and then start new. So there was a lot of different elements in our wedding, as you can see, between the Jewish rabbi and the Native American minister and the Civil War music and Daisy dressing up as an Indian, and I think we played some Irish music too, and Fiddler on the Roof and all kinds of stuff. Oh. And Crystal Skulls, of course.
I grew up around Vicksburg, and actually my grandparents' home was in the park itself.
Oh, wow.
But I had my Cherokee fourth great-grandfather was captured at the Battle of Big Black Bridge.
Uh-huh.
At Vicksburg, he was a Civil War officer and a Confederate officer, and he and his brother both. And so, and I've always felt a real strong. I was like, when I was a kid, I was lived in Santa, grew up in Santa Monica. Later on, you know, we moved around a lot. My home was Vicksburg, but I lived in Santa Monica. I had an experience where I found an old World War II canvas rucksack, and that. I was drawn to that smell of the canvas. I don't know what they put in it, but it was just so strong, and I just had to have it. And of course, I had to turn it over to the gardener, and then could come get it 10 days later. But you know, there's just certain clues. I mean, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I feel related to the Civil War, because I also had a very strange experience too when I was at Lincoln's grave in Springfield, Illinois. Even before I was spiritual, I had to work there for my company. And, of course, you know, everybody's curious about Lincoln and everything, so I went there. And even in that time before I was aware, I just had very strange feelings, like his spirit was there and he knew me. But one of the things that came out of my conversations with my friend in Utah is I believe that some of the officers from the Civil War who have reincarnated now, that they made an agreement before they were born that they're going to come together somehow and they're going to do something for peace, because many of them were very close friends, you know, and then they had to fight each other on the other side, and it really tore them apart. So I believe this group of souls has made an agreement that they're going to come together in this lifetime and use the genius that these generals had, because, you know, a lot of them were just so intelligent people, and tried to do something for peace.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of WiseFoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from WiseFoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed, and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year's supply from WiseFoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit WiseFoods.org today and see why.
So if there's any of your listeners that hear this and they vibrate with that, they should get a hold of me, because I feel later on, maybe in the next year or two, this is a project that I have to work on as well, is to try to meet with some of the other people from that time and see how we can work together for peace.
That probably explains why there are so many Native or Civil War and Native reenactment groups are concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how many people have an interest in the Civil War, but it must have had more of a meaning to it than we understand now. It must have introduced something into the planet that, you know, it didn't really resolve. It initiated some kind of an energy, and now it's coming back now during this time of transformation. And so that's why a lot of those souls are drawn to come here, is because they want to do something to create a more peaceful planet, so we never have to go through where human is fighting against human. And, of course, George Washington's dream, which, again, is in your book, he saw this conflict in America, and that angel, I think it would be an angel that appeared to him, gave him the vision of the challenges for the United States, where he saw American fighting American. Yeah, so all these things seem to tie together, you know. They're interconnected.
It's like it's all one reality and all one timeline, but on their side, but here it's linear.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Well, you know, I shouldn't bring it up, because with me, you know, I've always had an uncanny pull to the South. And anytime the war is brought up, I have this tremendous sadness, you know, and it's all coming from the South.
Oh, you're just
And my family was all, you know, Yankees. And my dad was very proud of it. And I always remembered listening to him do the talk, and I'd always be, you know, very quiet, because I never had that loyalty towards the North. You know, even as a small child, I always had this strong, strong loyalty to the South. Not for the war itself, but what we lost in the war.
Yeah.
You know, our way of life, you know.
Yeah. And the South was punished after the war was over, which
was
unfortunate.
Yeah, with the carpetbaggers and that. And it's just, and so you see, that's where my heart is in the South, you know.
Yep.
But you know, you're right, though. You know, I never even thought about that, but, you know, that really makes sense, because that would explain, like, if the people were reincarnated back in to this age, you know, off the Civil War times, that would explain how come there was such a movement in the 60s, you know, for the black movement, you know, and trying to bring the blacks and whites together. It was like something that wasn't quite accomplished during the Civil War.
Yeah.
You know, the slaves were freed, but the life that we were trying to make of it was never accomplished. So we needed to, you know, in the 60s, we were able to do that.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, so, you know, that may be, so you guys may have a very, very good point that we did come back from that period of time to finish something that wasn't accomplished from the time prior.
In the 60s, we just found out that, you know, not everything that you're taught is true.
Yeah.
And it's just like a lot of things that were taught around in the midst of revolving around President Lincoln. You know, he was a very unhappy man in a very unhappy marriage, and but a very spiritual person and a prophet in his own right. And, you know, no one is perfect. And, you know, there was a lot of hatred for a long time. I know in my hometown, until President Eisenhower visited Vicksburg, they celebrate July 4th until the late 50s or early 60s.
Well, you know, we could actually take that back, you know. I mean, even the Civil War, that was still at the same period, you know, that we were having, there was a lot of slavery with the Indians going on at the same point in time, wasn't there?
Yeah, the
Indians accelerated right after the war.
Yeah.
Because the war took so much attention from them, but then it's like...
Because then they went off, a lot of those soldiers, they went west to be soldiers and to round up the Indians, you know, and,
exactly.
You know, and take over and civilize the West, you know.
Yeah.
I'm being sarcastic there. blue out, right? You know what I mean? I'm just sarcastic towards them, not the Native Americans. But I mean, but still, maybe that whole period, so maybe we could extend that reincarnation period from, you know, from the Civil War through what happened with what they did with the Indians. All of it, you know, and that whole era is now back, trying to make everything right.
Well, I know Grandfather Rowan Thunder, he called, the so-called New Agers, he just called them reincarnates. He says they're back. He says, anyway, it really was a fulfillment of prophecy, too, because one of the Hopi prophecies said that probably one of the Plains prophecies said that the Indians, it's even in the song, Indians dress up like cowboys and vice versa, but they changed positions.
Yeah.
Where the ones that were fighting and killing Indians in the 1860s were probably the group that came in the 1960s.
Yep.
Well, if that would be the case, then Abraham Lincoln or Kennedy would have been the reincarnation of Abraham Lincoln.
Could have been. I mean, look at all the, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah,
because then he came back. And wasn't there all those coincidences, now that you think about it? I mean, wasn't there something on the web where you could actually go back and see all the different coincidences there, or similarities there are between Abraham Lincoln and Kennedy?
They were talking about this on our belt just the other night.
Oh, really?
Actually, they were talking about, it was the night before last, Ian Plant was talking about John Wilkes Booth, and someone in the family called in and said that a lot of this has been kept a secret in their family, but she said, a lot spoken about the car he was driving and all that other kind of stuff, but she said that her grandmother, who wrote a book about it, even noticed that the astrological signs were flipped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was just... It's almost like the whole thing had been prearranged.
Yeah.
And the people that, and the person that prearranged it was dropping such a big hint. But when you think about who Lincoln was and who Kennedy was, Kennedy really was killed because he was getting ready to break up a large part of the bureaucracy of the United States government and the intelligence agencies. And, those things weren't even developed back in Lincoln's time. They started up, Secret Service was started up by his successor. But Lincoln grated against, he didn't like being guarded, he knew he was going to die, had a sense of, he had a sense of peace about it, and he had no problem with it. And but the only time he ever had told everybody goodbye rather than, good evening or I'll see you tomorrow, was the night that he was assassinated.
Yeah.
So he knew.
Yeah, all that. Yeah, because I know if you went on the search, and for listeners, go on a search engine and just see the comparison between the similarities between President Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln, and you are just going to be amazed. And I'll bet you that's what you guys brought, or bringing up that point. I think you guys are right on about that. That era has come back to finish up business that wasn't able to be finished before.
Yep, I think so.
And because the problems were so immense, it took more than one lifetime to do, to accomplish.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a book, Charles Higgins was on the other night, author of Murdering Mr. Lincoln, which is a new book that's out, and actually this man is a British gentleman that had examined documents that had not been handled probably since the end of the Civil War, and it found out just how bad, because Lincoln was causing problems. He almost brought about an economic collapse in Britain because he stopped the export of cotton. And people in Canada, I mean, the conspiracy to murder him was very, very far-flung. There were a lot of people that were...
Well, the Kennedy, he knew his time was numbered.
What he was trying to do, he talked about trying to break up the CIA and into a bunch of different pieces. And it's absolutely amazing. I know
I know Rolling Thunder always felt that he was always followed whenever he would leave Carlin. It was always, you know, the man in the black suit that was watching him from a distance, you know, reminding him that supposedly that, you know, you're we're always going to be watching you, and you're not invulnerable to us.
So. Well, now that we figured out who Abraham Lincoln is, I'd love to find out who John Brown was.
Huh?
Who do you think that one is?
Boy, and you think about some of the...
Now, that one was a real rebel rouser.
When you think about some of the juxtapositions of some of these people that were the enemies in this life, and they got over to the other side, and they're probably laughing it up, showing up, says, well, we put on a good show, didn't we? Shakespeare was right. The world is a stage, and all the people merely players.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, we were doing something in one of our groups the other night about all life is your role playing. You just jump from one actor to another, you know, one play to the next.
Yeah, well, I'd like to sign up to be a different actor.
Why? You got crystal skulls.
Well,
you're a very, very lucky man, you know.
It's an interesting life.
But, oh, you must have had a wonderful life, a very interesting life, you know. And, you know, that's what it's all about. Have fun with your life.
Yeah, well, I think I'm like my wife. I get many inner suggestions and ideas. I get projects. I have so many projects living inside of me, you know, seeing the future of things that are going to come up, and I just try to do the best I can and go for them, because I believe that you have to, you know, live life to the fullest, do the things that make you happy, and I'm very grateful for God that he brought Daisy into my life, that I have somebody who enjoys doing the things with the crystal skulls.
Well, you know, there again, it was unfinished business between you and Daisy from the previous lifetime.
Well, actually, we've...
So you had to carry it over.
Yeah, we identified another lifetime that we knew each other, and we're going to be checking into that when we go into Germany in the next couple of weeks here. You know, something that we happen, it's like whenever we meet, we always have a connection between us. And, you know, there's always this love bond, because that's what happened to me when I looked at her. My heart just opened up, and, you know, I said, I know this woman.
Your soul recognized her.
Oh, yeah, and she recognized me as soon as I walked into the room. And then it just so happened that she finished her divorce the same month I finished my divorce. You know, and we just came together. So we know that this was meant to be.
Yeah.
And so I can say, and I'm not a very emotional person, but being with Daisy, I think I'm more emotional now, that I really understand when you look at those couples, you know, that are really in love and they look at each other and they can't do it without each other. Well, I have my partner that I feel that though.
Yeah.
But we're totally different. I'm more of a mental person, you know, into the computers and everything, and she's more of a feeling, intuitive type person. But we still have some interesting things to go.
In other words, you complement each other.
Yeah, very much so. She's
a
Taurus Earth sign, and I'm an Aries with no Earth in my chart. So there you go. And she has a lot of fire in her chart, so it means that I can deal with it when she gets into her fire and it gets a little bit frustrated because something's not working or whatever.
Well, she's Taurus.
Yeah.
You said? Yeah.
Yeah. But
I'm a Cancer myself.
Yeah.
What are you, Blue Water?
I'm a Sagittarius rising, and those people are supposed to be world teachers.
I've never found out what my rising sign is.
Oh, just go to astrodeets.com. You can, I'll send you the link, astrodeets.com. You can get a free chart done.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Did you get, repeat that again for the listeners.
A-S-T-R-O-D-I-E-N-S-T. And I'll check to see. I think there may be, if I think it's between Astro and Deets, D-I-E-N-S-T.com. But you can get, you really need to know your birth time, so you need to...
Well, you see, that's what I need to do, is I got to get a hold of my birth certificate and find out when... I've lied so much about my age, I don't even know when the heck I was born anymore.
Well, you know, my mother, when I was growing up, she kept saying, well, you were born on December 8th, at 808. That's not true. I was born 757, you know, but there's a lot of eights revolving around my life, and so it's been my lucky number and everything. But yeah, I think you need to know a good chart. You have to know your birth time within about 6 minutes, as I recall.
I was the seventh child born on the seventh month on Friday the 13th. If that tells you anything.
Well, that's interesting. Glenn Campbell was the seventh son of a seventh son.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to these things.
Yeah.
Really, yeah.
Oh, well, I love sacred geometry. You know, numerology. It's so interesting. You know, and, but anyhow, why don't you give us your website again for our listeners?
Sure. All right, and then maybe I can just talk a little bit more about the book.
Oh, please do. I was just going to tell you that, though.
Okay, so our website for the book is www.crystalskullexplorers.com.
And the name of the book?
And the book is called Journeys of a Crystal Skull Explorer, and that's with myself and Daisy. And basically, the book is not quite ready yet. There are a few people who have received it. We just have a few little technical difficulties we have to iron out so that people can get it through our website. But we have a workshop here in Holland this weekend, so people will be able to buy the book, too.
Well, I've seen it, and I want to tell folks they got to read it. You just got to go read it.
Well, thank you. You know, one thing I will say for other people who are authors, it's very difficult to know how good is your work when you're sitting there for 2 years looking at it over and over again with all the information. But I went through this with our first book, Mysteries of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, where, you know, I thought the same thing, oh, everybody's going to know what's in there. And we got many amazing comments from people and experiences. So, and I will tell you, there were people in the room here with me while I was writing it and giving suggestions and trying to help me to figure out what to put into it, because, as Blue Otter said, it's 560 pages, but that's the condensed version.
Well, let me, on your book, let me just read to the listeners here what is in your book. There's reports of a new ancient crystal skulls, a crystal skull history.
Yep.
We hear from the carvers of the new skulls, the results of some fascinating scientific research conducted over the past 3 years. What role do the newly carved skulls play? Secret codes found or linked to the crystal skulls? Is there a connection with the crystal skulls and the crop circles? How to work with and activate your own crystal skull. What is the blue crystal skull? What do the indigenous people say and know about the crystal skulls? And some of the most incredible stories and experiences around the crystal skulls. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's what's in there and more. But that would be a good summary of it.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Otter. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
I have to ask you one thing.
Yeah.
Is there a connection between the crystal skulls and the crop circles?
Well,
I don't want to have you give away the whole book, but
no, it's
curious.
I tell this story in the lectures because I think it's pretty fascinating. What we did is we took our crystal skulls into the crop circles first, you know, because we just wanted to have them experience the energy. But then there was a crop circle researcher named David Kingston, who actually is the British crop circle researcher for our World Mystery Research Center, and he brought with him a device that is sensitive to the electromagnetic field in the crop circles. So what he was doing is he was measuring energies, and we just decided to go into the center of the crop circle and see, could the crystal skull change the energy of the crop circle? That was what our question was. So what we did is we took our skull, Portal Deleuze, we put him in the center there, and initially we did not observe any change in the energy of the crop circles. So what is interesting is this one we were doing the research in, I walked into it when some local people were kind of giving me a tour of some of the different parts by Avebury. That's where this crop circle showed up. And we just stumbled into the crop circle. And Portal told me, he said, the next time you come here, I would like you to bring your CD player with your headphones and play Pasha Bell's Canon and do a meditation with me. So the second time I went there, Daisy was with me. She wasn't with me the first time. So I did what Portal told me to do. And David Kingston, then we put the skull in the center, and he changed the energy of the center of the crop circle after that meditation from being zero to being a plus 90 or off the scale.
Huh.
And the thing that happened is when he was in the center of the crop circle, initially Daisy, David Kingston, and myself, and normally I don't see things going on inside of the skulls like Daisy can see and some of the other people I know can see, but I saw a swirling energy swirling in and swirling out. And so what Portal was showing us was is that there's this swirling energy at the center that negates itself, and that's the reason why the reading was zero. But when I meditated with the crystal skull, with the music, and by the way, when I did that, there was like this cone of energy that came around me. My eyelids were fluttering, and I tried to sing with Pasha Bell's Canon, and Daisy said she didn't know what song I was singing with because I thought it was great. I thought I was singing wonderfully, but nobody could recognize what I was singing. So I must have been in a completely altered state. So when we talked to David Kingston about this, he said that one of the phenomena related to the crop circle is they have recorded sounds or music where they're able to translate the electromagnetic frequencies they measure into a music.
Speaking about that, I just want to interject this. We had a crop circle here in Wisconsin that Brad and myself went down and investigated. And we went inside. And Brad didn't hear it, but I did. And anyhow, when I got into the circle, or just started going into the circle, I could hear this tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick sound.
Yeah.
Okay, almost like crickets. Okay, but Brad couldn't hear them. And anyhow, I got a recording of it. And so when I played the recording, it did. It sounded like crickets, tick-tick-tick-tick-tick, like that. And, but then something in me said, you know how your voices work, and it says, turn the speed down on that. Drop the speed.
Yeah.
So I dropped the speed on that, all right? And you know what I got?
What did you get?
Da-dum, 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 a heartbeat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. And so and they did find out, and I started doing some research on it and found out that these crop circles do give out harmonics. They
yeah.
do give out a music, the music of the crop circles.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm doing a new class, which we're going to present in England in April and also in America in May, called Manifestation of the Aquarian Age. And I've interviewed some of the people I've met who know about the crop circles, and several of them make comments about that the sound or music or something is linked or connected with the crop circles. So this is an important part of studying them. So the bottom line from my experience with our crystal skulls is that they can interact with the electromagnetic frequencies and energies in the crop circles, and they have the ability to change them, because we also did another one a year later with Daisy, where we put her at an intersection of like two energy lines, and she was meditating with Portal de Luz, and one of the energy lines split into two.
Huh.
And the researcher said, I've never seen that happen before. So,
well, we found out that a lot of these crop circles are being made right on these ley lines.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, because what I would, my interpretation of this is, and again, this is based on what the researchers was talking about, is these like light balls that they see that are making them, possibly.
Yeah, yeah.
That these could be coming from, well, I don't know if it's intelligence that's connected to the Earth or, you know, outside of the Earth, but it's an intelligence. And if these intelligences are going to walk through dimensional portals, they're going to come through where the ley lines cross because that's where these doors are. And also when Daisy was doing the meditation with Portal de Luz, she had a communication with certain extraterrestrial beings, and they were very tall, and what she said was, is they were very disappointed in us. And they were disappointed because here they had created, I think this was what's called the Irish knot crop circle. Here they had made this beautiful pattern for us, and instead of enjoying it and having fun with it, where all these researchers are coming and we're measuring the energy and we're trying to prove it's a real one instead of enjoying what they had given to us.
I have something for Daisy to try, and I think she's really going to like this.
Okay, well, I'll put her on so you can tell her.
Okay.
I have something for you to try.
Hello.
Hi, Daisy. We were talking about those spheres and the crop circles, and you thought that they were maybe some sort of a device used by interdimensional entities, right? Or some sort of intelligent entities, right? Well, go to your crystal skull and ask and trace your sphere or trace these spheres back to Haiti, underground. And
I don't know.
Well, I don't want to tell you too much because I want the skulls to tell you. But these spheres, they're like from what I just did an interview with this one gentleman. He was a remote viewer and he worked for the government. Okay, and he was talking on these spheres. Of making the crop circles.
Yes.
And he was also talking about these rods. And he said that they're information gatherers. They gather all information of everything that happens here on Earth. And they're being, they go to dump their information or whatever, they're being controlled out of this place underground on the island of Haiti. By the extraterrestrials.
Uh-huh.
And if you and this group can also be traced right back to Mars on the inner part of Mars, the center of Mars or underground of Mars, and they're producing they're these robotic type people that live there. And they're the ones that are making these rods and these spheres to be used here on Earth. And now these robotic entities, they're actually made by a higher being, which are pure intelligent energies. Now, they've evolved that far. So anyhow, I didn't really want to give you all that information because I wanted your skulls to try it, you know. But ask your, you know, just focus with your skulls and see if they don't take you to the inner surfaces of, or you know, the inner part of the island of Haiti.
Inner part of the island of Tahiti.
Haiti.
Haiti,
yeah.
H-A-I-T-I. It's in the Caribbean Ocean.
Oh, yeah. Haiti. Okay, yes.
Okay.
Now I understand. Thank you.
Yeah. But anyhow, that's what I wanted you to give it a try.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting because it's part of the history of the so-called voyage of discovery made by the colonial pirate Columbus. I had to get my dig in there. No, just kidding. We learned a lot from Columbus. But anyway, he noticed, he wrote that there were luminous green ships that came up out of the ocean and were flying around.
In Haiti?
It was in that area, because
yeah.
that's...
Well, that's where the central control is supposed to be for these spheres and the rods. And the spheres and rods are information gatherers. And everything that happens here on Earth is gathered by these devices. And the spheres are the ones that are making the crop circles.
That's what I believe, because they appear to me like very tall spirits, like radiating like gold.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they said to me. Why are you investigating everything? Just enjoy it.
Yeah.
What we have here.
And you see, these intelligent beings, they would be, or, you know, the ones that were making these robotic beings on Mars,
yeah.
they would be described like what you said, because they would be pure energy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, intellectual energy.
Yes. But did I understand this correctly, that you said that they would come from the... Inside of Mars, then?
The robotic beings that they created, supposed to be in Mars.
Okay, yeah, because these beings who communicated with me said they came from the inside surface from our Mother Earth.
They could well then, yeah.
That's what they said to me.
Yeah. Because it shows that a lot of our races have gotten to a point where, you know, that they've become so advanced that they've left, you know, and went other places.
Yes, yes.
And, but they're also supposed to be a being that is just, that has evolved so much that, you know, that they're just nothing but just intellectual energy.
For having us on your show tonight, and also Daisy sends her regards, and I thought what I would do is just, yeah, from Daisy's love of her heart to participate.
Oh, bless her.
I thought what I'd like to do is just kind of wrap up about the crystal skulls, kind of summarize it in just a few final details about the new book that's coming out.
Okay.
And also maybe some information for the people in England about our visits in England in April and July. Well, for me, having worked with the crystal skulls now for over 20 years, when I saw a me, just even the picture of a me, this amethyst skull, something inside of me told me that these artifacts are extremely important for the future of our race. And this is the reason why I've pretty much devoted almost all of my time to teaching, to our lectures, and answering emails and our website, as well as the private consultations we do, and also working with some of the other people in the community. I just feel that people have to know about the crystal skulls, you know, the idea of the image of the skull itself sometimes causes a little bit of fear, because we think, this is the skull of a dead person. But if you study many of the different ancient cultures, you know, the Mesoamerican cultures, Native American, and even going farther back than that, that the image of the skull represents, I think, the connection to God or the Godhead, and that the skulls have assisted many civilizations over a long period of time, then were hidden, and now all of a sudden, you know, quite a few are starting to come out. And I also believe, too, from the interviews that we did in our book, that as Blue Otter said in the interview, the native elders are deciding what are they going to do with the sacred teachings they have and the sacred objects they have, that they realize there's going to come a point where they have to start to bring these things out. Because, you know, we're getting into some very difficult challenges now. So I really believe the crystal skulls are here to assist humanity. There are some theories about whether there's a group of 13 that work together, which I've heard of through some native legends, or maybe there's multiple groups of 13 that work together. But I think there are some special crystal skulls that we haven't seen yet that will be coming out maybe within the next few years, maybe this blue skull that we didn't get a chance to really talk about, but the people can read about it in our new book from Peru that we've been looking for. So I think it's very important just to have an awareness of it. For the listeners of the show, I just wanted them to understand the book we're talking about is first coming out in an e-book form. and they will need to have a PC computer with Windows in order to read it. We do have an agent in America that's looking for a publisher for us, but I have no clue when it will come out into a published form. And I'm doing this basically because I feel like I have to get this information out as quickly as possible. We also have a free ebook, which if the people go to our website that we've given, www.crystalskullexplorers.com, if they send me an email and they're interested to get a hold of that, that book is not out yet. It's kind of like a little mini book. It has pictures of our crystal skulls. It has that meditation that we talked about. So if they're interested in participating, it would be good to get a hold of that. So they can get a hold of that as well. And now for the listeners in England, we have a tour of England coming in April of 2004 this year. We'll be going to a number of places. And again, if they go to our website, it has the entire itinerary for England, which different places we're going to be. And if the listeners are in London, we don't pass through London in April, but we will be speaking at the College of Psychic Studies on July, I think it's the 22nd or 23rd, if they contact that organization, they could find out when we're going to be there. And I may try to arrange, if it's possible,